Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
And I'm Tyler Clausen.
It's one of the hardest questions a parent has to face. A kid comes to you and asks, "Is Santa real?" Oh, and also you're pretending to be Santa at the time. You know, we've all been there, right? I know I have never been like that. But I know Frankie has. Local elf Linda Tate comes to tell us how to handle this common situation. The second half of our show is loaded with art, the finer things of life. We're reviewing a new film. Well, I'm reviewing a new film, Mary Poppins Returns, sharing the latest book recommendations from the Book Nook in Canby, and debuting our new segment, In the Studio. Don't know why it sounds so weird. Where we'll be asking local artists about their process and why they do what they do. But first, the news. Clackamas is the only county in the Portland metro area which has no dedicated local funding source to maintain its 1,400 plus miles of roads or to build new improvements. Contrast that with Washington County, which has a local gas tax, property tax, and vehicle registration fee that generates almost $50 million a year to help with its 1,300 mile road system, and Multnomah County, which has a local gas tax and vehicle registration fee that raises almost $18 million for 230 road miles it maintains. Though some new revenue has been made available through the state to provide support for important transportation projects, it's not enough to meet the needs of resurfacing roads or funding capital projects to ease the traffic congestion. That's why the county is considering a countywide vehicle registration fee, or VRF, of $30 per year per vehicle for cars, pickups, motorcycles, vans, and other passenger vehicles. The revenue would be split between the county and cities, so both rural and urban residents would benefit. It's estimated that the fee would raise around $5.5 million for Clackamas County to use in surface transportation improvements. Canby's share would be approximately $331,281. Big numbers. These dollars could be used for capital projects, pavement and general maintenance, and installing sidewalks, ramps, and other improvements. Gary Schmidt, Director of Public and Government Affairs, told the County Board of Commissions on Tuesday that he and his team would have have held seven public meetings so far, discussing the need for and potential benefits of the new fee over 200 residents and business leaders.
And overall, I will say there was no blatant opposition to a VRF, nor is there total support for a VRF, but a lot of really good questions about why, what's the need, how will the money be spent, and what it means in particular for the homeowner or the resident. What will this mean to my pocketbook? And almost everyone said, once they had finished the community meeting, "Thank you for sharing this. Now that I understand it, I would be open for the county to do this." Almost universally, that's the feedback we received.
Though not all commissioners are yet on board with the proposed fee, Commissioner Martha Schrader said she supports it.
"We have tried this again and again, and I think even I'm at the point, because I'm fine putting things out to a vote, but I'm at the point after doing this for so many years where we got to do something. I will do the best I can to justify this to the public and just say we've been doing this, guys. We got to bite the bullet here. And we're functional government, for God's sakes. I mean, we don't close down. We don't do all the other nonsense. I'm more than willing to just kind of, you know, frame it and say it's time. It's the time to act is now."
The matter will now go to a formal public hearing before the board early next year. The public will have the chance to weigh in on the proposal before commissioners make their decision. We did it! The Population Research Center has released its certified population estimates for 2018, and Canby's population grew after all. Slightly. According to Population Estimates Program Manager Huda Alkut, Canby's population increased from 16,660 in 2017 to 16,800 in 2018. The increase of 140 souls translates to positive population growth of 0.8%, which is great.
but that's only about half of the 1.6% growth Clackamas County saw over the same period. This slower growth is consistent with the most recent enrollment numbers of the Clackamas School District, of the Canby School District, which shows a slight decline since 2012. Declining birth rates and aging population are contributing to slower growth statewide, such as natural increase, the number of births minus the number of deaths, that whole formula, how now contributes less to Oregon's overall population growth than any time since the 1930s. As to why Canby's population growth is slower still, a lack of affordable and entry-level housing for younger couples and families may be to blame. When the preliminary estimates were published, it appeared that the city of Canby's population hadn't grown at all over the past year. In fact, what had happened was that the city staff had unintentionally failed to respond to the Population Research Center's request for the information they needed to make their estimates. When this oversight came to light, the city moved quickly to address the matter before the population estimates were finalized December 15th. The numbers do matter, as they play an important role in land use planning decisions by the state, federal, and local levels. You can often spot a shifty character by their wild claims that whatever they're trying to sell you could be a gold mine. This guy just took it one step further. Last week, a federal jury in Portland returned a guilty verdict against Harry Dean Proudfoot III, 78 years old, formerly of Tigard, for running a fraudulent gold mining investment scheme that he used to steal $3.2 million from over 140 investors. In 2008, Harry Proudfoot created Three Eagles Research and Development, a company based in Tigard that he would use to solicit investors for a purported gold mining operation in Ohio. Harry Proudfoot, along with his adult children, including co-defendant Matthew Proudfoot, falsely promised to use investors' money to purchase mining equipment and conduct mining operations at two gravel pits in Ohio. Instead, they used the money for living expenses, cars, travel, credit card bills, medical payments, and other expenses to keep the scheme afloat. To entice investors, Proudfoot and his children offered high rates of return, typically 10% of gross revenues, payable once the mine became operational. They falsely told investors that they had all the necessary legal and business requirements in place for mining operation. In 2011, the states of Washington and Colorado and the SEC began investigating the group for security violations. Ultimately, the U.S. District Court of the District of Oregon entered a judgment against Harry Proudfoot, Matthew Proudfoot, and the Three Eagles Research and Development Company in the SEC enforcement action. Harry Proudfoot faces a maximum sentence of 20 years in prison and a $250,000 fine and 3 years supervised release on each count of wire fraud and 10 years in prison. A $250,000 fine and 3 years supervised release on each count of money laundering. He will be sentenced on April 3rd, 2019 before the U.S. District Court Judge Michael H. Simon. Co-defendant Matthew Proudfoot pleaded guilty to wire fraud and money laundering on November 1st, 2017. He will be sentenced on January 9th, 2019.
Rock, that totally rocks, mate.
I don't know why I did that. Metallica's not English. But thanks to the band Metallica, Clackamas County College is moving more heavy metal into its career technical education programs. The college is one of 10 recipients to receive a $100,000 grant from the Metallica Scholars Initiative, funded by Metallica's All Within My Hands Foundation. That's right! Metallica Scholar is now an actual thing, and not just what you tell her parents when you've flunked out of school for listening to too much heavy metal. This major workforce education initiative provides direct support to community colleges to enhance their career and technical education programs. These programs provide skills and services to students who are looking to enter a traditional trade or other applied learning program. CCC is just one of 10 community colleges from across the country chosen throughout a competitive proposal process to receive $100,000 to support students training to enter the American workforce. These students will become the first cohort of Metallica Scholars. The Metallica Scholars Awards are designed to provide support of relevant job skill training for community college students, reinvest in communities that supported Metallica during its recent United States tours, and leverage the influence of Metallica to elevate the importance of career and technical education. CCC will use the grant funding to purchase tools, textbooks, personal protective equipment for low-income students studying computer numerical control, industrial technology, welding, and automotive technology. In addition to the tools, equipment, and textbooks, the CCC cohort of Metallica Scholars will receive resume and interview prep and practice, job and or internship placement assistance, advising, career coaching, and additions to support in transportation, books, and supplies. In sports this week, the Canby Cougar girls basketball team has been on a tear of late, winning their last three games, the last two on the road against Centennial and Newburgh. Their December 11th home game against Sprague was a slaughter, and the Olympians got sent packing home to Salem by a score of 68-26. Ouch. The girls are sitting at 4-2 on the season as they prepare to face Forest Grove on Friday at home for their final game before the holiday break. The action starts at 7 p.m., people. Be there or be square. Nobody says that anymore. The Canby boys are also doing well this season. They split their last two games, falling at home versus Forest Grove, but pulling out a thrilling victory over Madison on Thursday. Big Ben Bailey came up huge in the 54-46 win, tallying 16 points, 12 rebounds, and 4 assists. Sophomore captain Diego Arredondo added 11-6. The boys will be in tournaments over the winter break. In swimming, the Cougars fell to Tigard last week at home, but the team showed improvement overall. Tigard women won 106-64, while the Tigard men finished just ahead of Canby 87-82. Very close. Next up will be Lake Ridge at 4 p.m. this afternoon at the Canby Swim Center.
Hi, Ray Keene here from the Canby Center. You are not alone. If you're having thoughts about ending your life, reach out to someone. Call 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255. Or call a local church such as Canby Christian Church at 503-266-4018. Canby Foursquare Church, 503-266-4444. Or Zora Lutheran Church, 503-266-4061. You know, people around you care even when you may not see it. You are not alone. Brought to you by the Canby Suicide Prevention Task Force.
Special guest for you guys today. You may have seen a few weeks ago this weird little elf running around town. I finally caught her. She's right here, Linda Tate. Linda, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
What were you doing?
Well, I was elf number 314.
Oh, okay, they're all numbered.
Just to be clear, yes. Right,
because there's thousands of them. So you're pretty far down the totem pole, I mean, if we're being honest.
Well, I'm one of the oldest elves. Okay. I have an old number.
Okay, there you go. What are they in, like 8 digits at this point?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Like prison uniforms that the elves wearing.
It's very serious.
Yeah. Okay, so proper name. What were you up to?
I was delivering mailboxes to 9 different businesses in the area. So that kids could write to Santa, and yeah. Santa would send them a letter back.
Yeah. Can you? So the you just took them all back on the 18th.
That's
but
correct.
Can you remember all nine businesses that were participating? Or?
Oh wow! Yeah. we had Wilco.
Uh-huh.
We had Columbia Bank.
Uh-huh.
Fultano's Pizza.
Uh-huh.
Lone Elder Pizza. Oliver Insurance. Secret Garden Floral. The Book Nook. Gosh. What else did we have? Think. Oh, we had the Mint Hair Salon, and we had Howard's Barbershop. Oh,
wow, you got all nine. That's yeah. really impressive. You elves are good. With, I mean, it's your job.
It is our job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So what was it all about?
Well, it started a year ago. Last year, we had two new businesses in town, the Book Nook and Secret Garden Floral.
Mm.
And I went in and visited with the owners. And I started thinking, you know, when new businesses come to town, we say, oh, we need to support them and we need to keep them going. And then we don't.
Mm.
And
oh
so,
my gosh, it's horrible. Mm-hmm, yeah.
And so I was at Home Depot and I saw a Letters to Santa mailbox. And I suddenly had this idea, like, why don't we put this box in those businesses?
Mm-hmm.
And then that would drive parents in there because their kids would be, let's go, you know, write a letter to Santa.
Yeah.
And it went really well and it was very successful. And
that's so cool. Thank you so much, too, for taking that initiative to help it welcome new businesses to our community. That's awesome.
Absolutely.
Very creative and also, great for the kids. So.
We had a lot of fun. They obviously don't need the help this year.
Yeah, they're pretty well established at this point, but still, I'm sure they wanted to do it again.
Oh, they did.
Did you throw on the elf costume last year?
No, this is the first year for the costume. We're getting serious now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kids were getting suspicious. They're like, wait a minute. She's just a normal looking lady.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. So the letters I got from the kids last year were just, some of them tickled me pink and some of them broke my heart. And there was one little boy in particular that basically has cemented the program forever in Canby.
Yeah.
If I ever die, someone else will have to take it over.
Yeah.
Yes. He wrote to me and he said, Santa, I love you so much. Could you be my pen pal?
Oh.
And I thought, oh no.
What have I gotten myself into?
What do I say?
Yeah.
And so I said, well, you know what? Santa would love to be your pen pal, but unfortunately I live at the North Pole and we only get mail once a year because it's so icy and stormy up here.
Mm-hmm.
But if you write to me every year, I'll write to you back.
Uh-huh.
So here we are.
Yeah. Well, okay. So this program can never end.
That's right.
We will ruin a small child's dreams. So.
That's right.
I guess the child will eventually grow up. But
correct. I figure about 5 years.
Yeah. Okay. So it's got to last at least 5 years.
Yeah.
So you got a good mix of some funny ones. It sounds like they were all, though, pretty earnest. Like,
oh, they were. You know, absolutely.
None of them were just doing that. Mom's making me write this.
No, none of them. One that just broke my heart. A little girl wrote in and she said, Santa, I really want to believe in you. My friends are bullying me because they said, you're not real. No one's ever seen you.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not real. She says, I really hope that you're real because I want to tell them about you and tell them.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. How do you respond to
that? It was a lot of pressure. So I said, you know what? First of all, thank you.
Oh my gosh. I'm like on edge here.
Yeah.
Like my heart is beating so fast. What did you say?
I said, first of all, thank you for believing in me because I sure believe in you.
Mm.
And I said, I was sorry that the
kids need to get some inspirational music to play over this segment.
I said I was sorry that the kids were teasing her, that my Rudolph got teased a lot before he found greatness.
There you go, a little bit of a deep cut.
Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, there's a lot of things in life that we know exist that we can't see, love being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, we love our grandma, we love spaghetti, we love school, we love our friends. No one would dare say love doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
So just like love, Santa does exist.
Mm.
And as long as he's in your heart, I will always be there.
Linda, I believe you might be an actual elf. That was amazing. Wow.
Elf number 314.
That is so cool. I hope that little girl keeps that letter. That is really special.
Yeah.
And you respond to every letter.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you tell any more, were there any funny ones that stand out to you?
You know, I had this one little boy. He was just full of questions.
Yeah.
How do the reindeer fly? You know, how
future,
old are you?
Reporter yes. here. Mm-hmm.
There must have been five questions, and I answered every single one of them.
Yeah.
He was a little bit concerned because his family was going to be traveling.
Yeah.
And so I had actually, over the year, I look for things that I can incorporate into the program. And I had found a key that was an ornament.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, love is the key. And then a date on the edge
of it. That's really cute. Yeah.
Yes. And so my husband was able to print these on little pieces of paper. So if a child says, I'm worried about how you're going to get into my house, I say, well, I use my key. And it says, love is the key.
They're worried how to put the presents in?
Yes.
Because they don't have a chimney or something?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Or they're not going to be home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
So I bet a lot of the kids, though, are asking, like, for stuff, right? I mean, that's what you generally do when you write to Santa. So how do you deal with that?
Well, if they ask for a live animal, I'm never really sure about
do
that.
Do you get a lot of asking, like a puppy or something?
Yes. Okay. I would like a pony. I would like a puppy. I would like five cats. Yes. So you can kind of tell where those are going. And so I just let them know that the elves make toys and that live pets aren't toys. And that I would give them the list and their wish list to the elves, my friends, the elves, and that they would come up with something very special.
Also just all the regulations and the permitting Santa would have to do. Oh my gosh, what a mess. I get it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To transport animals across borders. Oh, good
the
grief.
Litter boxes alone. I'm
the North Pole is only so big. I mean, come on. Yeah, I don't want to mess with customs and all that stuff.
No.
So that's how you respond to the live animal question.
That's right. The rest of them, I just let them know that I'm going to give the list to the elves and that I'm sure they'll come up with something you know, that you like.
Yeah.
The other thing I do is I include some elf glitter.
Mm-hmm.
In my responses. So I have these little snack
such
baggies.
Such as regular glitter.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, but I have 18 different colors.
Yeah.
All of them have a little sparkly to them. They're like magic dust.
Yeah.
And so I make sure that I go through all of the colors and then start over so that if kids from the same family, they won't get the same colors in their glitter glitter bags.
Yeah.
But I always tell them that the elves love glitter, and so they wanted to send them a special, you know, gift of glitter for Christmas.
You know, something that I heard recently about glitter, it was on a true crime podcast, but that glitter is so unique that forensically it's almost like a fingerprint.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that they can trace glitter. They find, like, I don't know how many murders or whatever have glitter on them, but apparently it's come up.
Oh, wow.
And that it's they're so unique in how it's made and where it comes from that, and maybe elf glitter is the same way. I don't know.
Yeah.
But regular glitter, they can actually trace and solve crimes from forensically looking at the glitter. So.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. So what is your house like around Christmas? Are there any traditions that you like to do?
You know, it always looks like Christmas threw up in my living room. I really love Christmas. Yeah.
Not on the outside of the house, just
inside?
No,
just on the inside.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, on the porch, you know.
But, it spills out a little bit when you open the door. Like, we've got some decorations out here now.
Kind of hits you in the face.
Yeah.
You know? I was like, whoa, lady.
All right, take it easy.
Yeah. Right, calm down.
What's your favorite Christmas movie?
Oh, gosh. Elf,
of course. I was hoping you would say that. Mine,
Santa.
Too. I love that movie. You don't smell like Santa. You smell like cheese. Yeah, that is my favorite all-time Christmas movie.
We were at Washington Square coming down the escalator, and this year Santa is like in a little cave. You can't see Santa unless you pay to get a picture.
What?
But coming down the escalator, you can see the top of Santa.
Okay.
And I nudged my husband, and I said, I'm going to do it. He goes, don't do it. I said, I'm going to do it. Santa!
Yeah, I bet they loved that.
Oh, they were totally. Yes,
that was so thrilled.
Security was explaining to me how much they loved it.
Cool. So you'll be, when do you send the letters back? You'll be pretty busy coming up here then, or? Well,
actually, they all went out as I received them.
Okay, mm-hmm. So you just do them right away.
I tried to get them done as soon as possible, mm-hmm. Because that's more magical.
Yeah, of course.
You know, they put it in the box the next day or two, they get the letter back. It's couldn't be the post office. Yeah,
of course not. No, yeah. that obviously came all the way from the North Pole. That's the only thing that makes sense.
Right.
That's really cool. So you've done this for 2 years now. Mm-hmm. What do you feel like you get from it?
Oh, gosh, I get more than I give, for sure. It just makes my heart smile, mm-hmm. you know, to think of these little ones opening this up. And
yeah.
And for them to stay little a little bit longer,
yeah.
you know. It made me really sad that there was a lot of kids bullying that one little girl for believing. You know, I would hope that parents, you know, if their kids have any thoughts on Santa, that maybe they keep them to themselves at school, because it's hard enough to keep kids little these days. You know,
it really is. He grew up so fast. My 4-year-old, she had a bullying thing at preschool where she said that a kid called her stupid, and it worked it out. It was fine, but it was funny because we were talking and she you know, we're like, you're not stupid and nobody should say that, and and you shouldn't say that back, and you should mm-hmm. tell your teacher and all this stuff. And she's like, yeah, and you should only call people stupid if they are stupid. So we had to talk a little bit more. Well, all right, well, Linda, this was really fun. Thank you so much for telling me this. Maybe we'll follow up again next year.
Absolutely.
And maybe, are you looking for any elf helpers maybe for next year?
Possibly,
yeah.
We may need Santa stamp donations.
Right, yeah, we might need that for sure. Yeah, and you pay, obviously, in elf glitter. So it's not just a donation.
It's worth their time.
Yeah, it is cool to see Canby. I mean, we've always had Light Up the Night, but now we've got the snowman thing this year, and this thing going, it's kind of cool to see Canby leaning into the Christmas thing.
Yeah,
so
it's fun.
Right. All right, well, any final thoughts?
No, I just want to thank all the parents that brought their kids in. Mm-hmm. It was fun.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. Merry Christmas, Linda.
Merry Christmas.
In the Studio With is a new video series by Canby Now contributor Hannah Ray Lambert, profiling the work and process of local artists. In her first episode, she sits down with painter Susan Black, formerly of the Black Star Watercolor Gallery in Aurora.
My primary medium is watercolor, and I've always been fascinated by it. It's very demanding. I took it up, frankly, because I thought it would be easy. And I took it up probably now almost 20 years ago. My background was not as a professional artist. I had a completely different background in public relations and corporate communications in New York City. So, but about 20 years ago, I really felt the urge to express myself visually. And I thought, well, watercolor, you know, kids do it. It can't be that hard. Ha! It is. But I persevered, and it still is hard because the nature of it is you're dealing with water. It moves around, it wants to blend, it wants to dissolve, it wants to do all kinds of things. My work, I think, ends up looking loose and free, but it's hard to do. It's hard to make it that way. What I like the most about watercolor is the beautiful translucency of the colors. And that's what I want to convey, and I think you'll see that in a lot of my work. I like to layer it and show that there's more than meets the eye from the beginning. I've become more and more fascinated about the layers that exist in life. There's what we see, and there's what's behind it, and then there's what's behind that, and so on. And I think watercolor allows me to visually explore that. Very, very, very hard to make a living as an artist, any kind of an artist. And of course, there's lots to art. There's graphic design. I mean, corporations are full of graphic designers. That's a good way to make a living as an artist. Art teacher, art professor, etc. But then you also have to factor in how much education you need to get to those positions. But if you're just doing it like I have always, which is just for the joy of it and the expression, I consider myself very fortunate. I've sold some paintings, and it feels really nice. Then I go and buy more paper or paint with that. But I've never had to rely on that. You gotta look at other people's art. Look what other people are doing and be generous. You yourself know how fragile it is to be an artist. When you go see someone else's work, find the good thing. It's like in art class when you're having a critique. Critique is not, let's criticize that painting. A critique is, okay, what works? What might not work? How could you improve it? When I came to Aurora, which was in the middle of 2014 and was fortunate enough to land in a place where there was an art show, a community art show every summer, and could take part in it, and then I chaired it for 3 years. What I was always cognizant of was that many of these people, it's the first time they had ever shown their work in public, and I wanted them to be comfortable. I wanted them to know that the art show was a good, safe place for them. And I do think that was achieved. And that made me feel happy, and that was part of the genesis for the art gallery that I ran here for a couple of years, is for many people, it was their first tentative steps into, you know, and when you hang your painting on a wall somewhere else and then go away, it's like a little part of you is there. I think one way is for communities to think about what they look like. And for example, I am thinking of Canby right now. When I moved here in the middle of 2014, it was evident to me that there was public art going on in Canby. Now, I moved from San Francisco, which has art all over the, the surfeit of art almost. But I come up here to a place that looks very different to me than San Francisco did, but I immediately saw public art. And that has only increased in the 4 years that I've been here. So I think that's one way. Support artists, buy original art. Do not buy giclées and copies. That was my mantra at the gallery. Support an artist. Know that what you're buying, the hand of the artist touched it. Go to the museums, go to galleries. Galleries, they don't charge admission. They're not gonna ask you how smart you are about Picasso's blue movement versus blue period versus something else. Go and look and keep your eyes open.
Find the full edition of In the Studio with Susan Black, or to see more local content produced by the Canby Now podcast team, visit our YouTube channel. Go to youtube.com and then just search Canby Now. And don't forget to subscribe, like, and comment. I'm not the biggest fan of musicals. Not that I hate music or dancing or basic frolicking while explaining my feelings. I'm totally down for those things when they're done right. When the feeling behind the song is genuine and the person who's being paid way more money than I'll ever see does their job right. Long-winded, I know. But I don't have the luxury of having a lyricist write my feelings for the whole world to hear. That being said, I do like good musicals, and I did enjoy the new Mary Poppins. Led by Emily Blunt, the magic nanny returns with illogical merriment and wonder, as well as head-spinning senses of fun. We follow three new Banks children as they go on from grown-ups back to being kids, as they should be, all while we see their father, Michael Banks, find a way to being a child again as well. We also get to see as Poppins helps Jane Banks find love and the introduction of O'Leary, a lamplighter who helps Mary Poppins spread joy all over London. There's also a subtle subplot featuring the rise of the working class of London, rising up against the tyrannical dictatorship of the industrialization and predatory nature of the upper class of the times. But that's just not as fun to talk about. The music was absolutely perfect, and the actors that sang them gave a wonderful and commanding performance. Ben Whishaw's song, speaking as a widowed husband to his late wife, was beautiful. And if you didn't have a tear in your eye at the end, then you're a monster! The nostalgia of the film is twofold. In one way, we get to go back to a family and characters that we love. Mary, Michael, Jane, and the ensemble cast that we remember fondly gives us goosebumps as we get to go see them all and see the story continued. In the other way, we're taken back to what it must have been like in 1964 for the spectators of Mary Poppins on opening night. The grandeur and tradition of storytelling, the feeling that you're making the best of the night with your family. From the long opening credits and a medley of songs we're about to sing along to the huge sets that the dancers and cast get to explore and have fun on. That same feeling that one might get from walking down a childhood street or even Disneyland's Main Street for that matter. The sense of longing for a different time and one that seems bright with color and never ending and echoes of joy. That's what you get from this flick. I like this movie a lot. Something that I'm realizing as I write this is that I can't wait for my nieces to be old enough to enjoy this movie so I can see the joys in their eyes. Like when the Banks children jump into a cracked porcelain bowl and the cartoon style of the 60s takes over the screen. Although it's been a few days since I've seen the movie, I'm still tapping my toes to the music and singing along with good old Jack, and I can safely say I'm enjoying the lovely London sky. I just can't get that song out of my head.
And we're back at the Book Nook with
Love
Megan
Nook.
And Paul's over there hanging out.
Yeah, they're doing a puzzle today.
Oh, okay. And you've got some cool stuff to share with us, local author stuff, and a really cool tradition that maybe we could start up.
I sure hope so. It's a tradition that my family has enjoyed participating in the last few years, and it's really hard to say, so I usually botch it, but yeah. That's okay, because Yule the Book of Flood, or Flood, is literally translates to the Yule Book Flood,
okay.
Which is an Icelandic tradition.
We're going to say it, we're going to call it the Yule Book Flood.
The Yule Book Flood, let's just go with that.
Yeah.
So in Iceland, they have an annual release of all their new books in the months leading up to Christmas. And right. So it's like a literal book flood into the stores of wow. all their newly published books. So the tradition then is that you buy books and chocolate and you gift them on Christmas Eve.
Right.
And then you go to bed and you read your books right away. And
oh, you
eat your
chocolate. You read the whole book on Christmas Eve?
You don't open it and say, oh, I'll read it next week. That's what they do on Christmas Eve. They get into bed with a warm cup of hot cocoa or chocolate and they read their book. So the tradition started back in, back during World War II. There was a restriction on imported giftware.
Right.
But the restrictions were less on paper.
Okay.
And so so they started printing, and then that tradition of gifting books was something they could still participate in, and it still follows to today.
Right, right.
Yeah. So to kind of incorporate that into our lives today, books always make the perfect gifts, I think.
Yes.
We have a lot of local authors that we've started having them visit us here in the store, and we've talked a lot lately about shopping local, but people don't always realize that there's local authors that they can support that are so neat. We have a gentleman, James Wilkes, right over here at the high school, and he writes a science fiction series. The first book in that series is called The Jovian Run.
Okay.
And so support a local teacher in his literary endeavors.
And when did this one come out?
So he's working on book 3. Right now, but book 1 came out in 2016.
Okay, so still pretty recent.
And so get caught up before book 3 comes out.
Yeah,
read the
definitely.
First two, and we have them here in store. The most recent author that we've had to come visit was Marianne Remsburg,
mm-hmm.
and she wrote a really interesting novel. It's so good. It's called Chosen for Such a Time as This. And she takes the story of Esther from the Bible, and she puts her into modern times. And what would her story look like if she lived today? What would that? So
yeah,
I highly recommend that one. And then if you're looking for a children's book to gift,
I'm always looking for a children's.
You're
book.
Always looking for.
I don't have kids, but I like the pictures.
Well, there's some good, and this author
got together with her partner, Michelle Walsh and John Madden, and he does the art, and it's scratch art, and it's just beautiful. Mm. It's called Letters of the West, and it's an ABC book of the many plants, animals, and other curious features of the West.
Nice.
So, yeah, that is a gorgeous gift book.
It's definitely
an adult or a kid.
It's hard to translate on a podcast, like a picture book, but it really is a very pretty book. If you like art as an adult, you can enjoy it. Mm-hmm. If you think your kids will like pretty pictures, then they'll enjoy it. Mm-hmm. It's a book for everybody.
Exactly, exactly. So if you need to pick up a Yule Book of Flood gift, you know.
You tried again.
I tried
and you,
it.
You kind of got there.
Someday I'll get it.
Yeah.
I highly recommend one of these books, especially this Letters of the West. It's just gorgeous.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with me, Megan, and I'm probably going to spend too much money now that we're going to finish this interview.
Thanks for coming in.
And that's our show. Special thanks to our guest today, Linda Tate. Hey, if you liked what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episode. Like a weak-willed parent, we're letting you open your Christmas present from us just one day early. Our Christmas special drops on Christmas Eve, guys, and you won't want to miss it. It includes local music, guest readings, and a special treat. We're unveiling never-before-heard audio of the last performance of Andy Williams, Mr. Christmas himself. If you have any news, tips, ideas for guests we should have on our program, or suggestions for how we can improve, please contact us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CanBeNow, or on our website, CanBeNowPod.com.